we stand in the gap of the VA or the normal world for our brothers and sisters that have wore the uniform. You can come to us with your spouse, your minor children. We'll heal the family.
To me, trauma is like an onion. Once you open it up, there's layers.
Because our goal is to get them healed as quick as possible and out the door.
You can come to us and work with us, and we can go back to that deeper rooted childhood stuff, which most veterans and first responders, that's where it starts.
If that's 2 sessions, 30 sessions, we're not going to charge the veteran and first responders.
If you're not feeling amazing after the second session, stick with us, because sometimes there's some deeper weeds that we got to get to.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my co-host, Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMT. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with Dr. Pamela Arnell. She's the executive director, and Nick Davis, who's a founding member of 220. We'll be speaking about veterans and first responders with post-traumatic stress who can heal from trauma without telling any of the content. We invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, PBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the podcast platforms, and go to our website, ResponderTV.com, for guest information and past episodes. We'll be right back to speak with Dr. Arnell and Nick Davis right after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers. With vital information and resources, resilient strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMTB.
Today, we're joined by Dr. Pamela Arnell. She's the executive director of 220. She became involved with 220 in March 2021 when the Giles County Fire and Rescue Squad assistant chief asked if she would be willing to go through the training. She went through the training process and was astonished at how well the program worked. Her husband was a veteran and served in Desert Storm. Nick Davis is an Air Force veteran, having served as an F-16 crew chief. And his involvement with 220 as vice president and co-founder is inspired by his burning desire to serve our veteran and responder community. His organization, Anxiety Guys LLC, is veteran-owned and operated business that uses multiple processes to disconnect PTSD, anxiety, and other negative emotions that keep individuals and organizations from reaching their full potential. Dr. Arnell and Nick, welcome to Responder Resilience.
Thanks for having us.
It's nice to have both of you. Looking forward to this conversation. I'd love to start with you, Dr. Arnell. Can you give us a little bit of background on your involvement with first responders and veterans? I know David just mentioned your husband, but we'd love to hear a little bit more.
Sure. I have been in the volunteer fire department in Giles County since 2008. We're a rural county, so our population's about 35,000-ish. And my assistant fire chief was actually in the platoon with Dan, and I handle or have handled all of those critical debriefings and anything related to the fire department and a lot of the law enforcement here in Giles County based on my history. I was a reserve deputy for 5 years for the sheriff's department, so I've got a really good connection with the law enforcement and the fire department here. So I originally was not going to go through the training. I told him that I had enough on my plate, that I didn't have time for it. So he convinces my fire chief, Bill Myers, to go through the training. And then they kind of sidebarred me one night before one of our countywide meetings and said, "You're going through the training." And I did it, honestly, you know, and I have always said this. I did it out of respect for them, but to shut them up so that they would quit hounding me. And here I am. It's funny because, you know, one of the things that I had said was that in order for me to put my professional name And I can go a little bit more into that in a second. But for me to put my professional name with any entity or organization, I have to be bought into it. So I've had a contract with the state of Tennessee for many, many years working with children that were either going into the system or coming out of the system and being reunited with their family. So I covered many of the districts in Tennessee. Actually, we served about 27 of the counties within my counseling business. And so I'm more of the unicorn, I guess you could say, because I know and even knew going through all the way to get my doctorate in clinical supervision that there had to be a better way, because there was no reason in having somebody talk about that trauma. I just didn't feel that that was something that was appropriate. You know, I would argue with my professors. I think they were glad when I graduated. But basically, I went through the process, and actually that night, so, and I did say, Ryan, the only way that I will do that is I'll have to go through that process. And so I did. And it was funny because my husband, he knew I was in class that weekend, and I came out and I was happy and I was laughing, and he thought I'd been drinking. He said, "No, have you been drinking?" And I looked at him and I said, "No." He said, "Tell me you were not drinking during that class." And I'm going, "No." He said, "What's wrong with you?" And I just said, "I need to go lay down." And that was the first night that I went to sleep without Ambien.
Oh, wow.
Incredible. Yeah. And, there's so many things you've talked about just now, Dr. Arnell, that I'd like to circle back to. And one of them is the concept of telling our story, say, over and over again about our traumatic incident and, you know, how that can affect our healing process. But let's put that on the back burner and come back to it. Nick, question for you. What is 22-0 and how did it get started?
22-0 for me was... it was a moment that changed my life. You know, watching my good friend Dan Jarvis, who was extremely jammed up at a leadership conference we were at, he spoke it into existence, and we're like, "What are you talking about, man?" He said, "We're going to take it from 22 vets to 0. So most of us laughed at that. We were like, "Yeah, good luck with that one, right?" Most people that have put on the uniform who know what post-traumatic stress is and anxiety and rage issues, how are you going to fix that? And at that same meeting, we got turned on to some folks that were doing some stuff outside the box. And Dan asked me, "Can you help me start a nonprofit?" I'm a financial planner by trade. So I said, "Absolutely." I've been trying to do things in the veteran space for a long time, but I think a lot of it was mindless, doing push-ups on my roof. And I wasn't actually doing something tangible. So when Dan and I got involved with this and I got to see a transformation in him, we were glued at the hip. I'm a contribute person. I love to help mankind. I just can't help it. Mm-hmm. And Dan's a better way and share it person. He finds a better way to do something, and we've got to go for it. And I think that brotherhood between us, it was needed, because there's been times Dan's brought a lot of abundance into my life. I'm not an angry person, but I was the guy that triggered to rage quickly, anger quickly. I had male role models in my life, specifically one that really could be pretty quick to react and angry. Mm-hmm. And that was coming out in my life with my children. If it weren't for Dan, I'd still be that guy that was triggering to anger quickly, even though I'm not that person. And I had my own serious trauma that was causing me nightmares 4 or 5 days a week, which actually revolved more around my relationship. It had less to do with my military. So it was all civilian related, you know, divorce as a child, divorce as a parent, and then severe accident, head trauma, thinking I'm going to lose my wife again. So I was having severe tension headaches and nightmares. And thanks to Dan's grit, you know, I'm here, Pam's here, and it's taken a team. You know, that really we've learned a lot from each other, and 22-0 has become that, in our opinion, that the gap. You know, we stand in the gap of the VA or, you know, the normal world for our brothers and sisters that have wore the uniform. You can come to us with your spouse, your minor children, will heal the family. And it's so important to us that even on our anxiety guys side, we have veterans that come to us that are running businesses, financially set, and we send them right to 22-0. We're not looking to take any compensation from our veterans, and it links right to 22-0's website. So we want a place where people can dump their trauma, dump their negative emotions, be the best dad, mom, spouse, friend, business owner possible without needing to relive or reshare that content. And getting Pam on board was, that was a special moment for me too, to watch her break into tears and see what she's already doing with the organization and taking it to levels that there's no way Dan or I could have done.
One of our colleagues committed suicide, and I was the first one on the scene and walking through the door of the hotel room.
It was a motor vehicle accident, people trapped, people on fire, human running down the street on fire.
I witnessed a patient who was assaulted with a baseball bat. And I remember opening the front door and hearing a police officer screaming, "It's bad."
Sounds like you have a great partnership here, and it's palpable. Just have to say that out loud.
Thank you. We're very blessed. And honestly, the warts, the stuff you don't see behind the scenes, you know, when you guys know what it's like, your team, mm-hmm. doing the podcast, you're looking for the answers. You know, there's been some tough times with Dan and I, or me and Pam, or tough mm-hmm. moments, and some of the emotional baggage that we were all carrying that we've used our processes mm-hmm. to work on
yeah.
have given us a better framework and understanding to serve the veterans and first responders that come to us. Cause our goal is to get them healed as quick as possible and out the door. And it's never a one and done. It's usually a few sessions to get the full mental margarita, as I call it. Mm-hmm. But that humility, which is, I think, our whole team brings, there's a lot of humility on the team, and attitude reflects leadership. And I think Pam's leadership right now is spot on. And I think it's starting to show in the connections that we're making in the veteran and first responder communities. It's going to save a lot of lives.
That's great.
Amazing.
Pam, can you talk specifically about the programs that you're offering right now that are serving PTSD and trauma?
Sure. So we have two specific protocols. So the trauma resiliency protocol and the emotions management process. Basically what happens is, when we have a veteran or first responder contact us, we're going to assign them a peer coach. And then in doing that, we're also going to run both protocols on them. We actually have our coaches that are throughout the U.S., so it's not just one location. We are national. We have worked with a lot of active duty we've gotten several active duty that have come in recently. But with the trauma resiliency protocol, you're able to go through the process and the emotions management process without sharing any of the content. And we're going to go back and get as much of the trauma, meaning we're going to go all the way back to birth. We're going to go as far back and get any of the ACEs, which are the adverse childhood experiences that they may have.
It's interesting because how you describe it, it sounds very similar to EMDR in its own ways. It's almost like they're on a parallel process with each other.
So the EMDR is under the umbrella of the NLP, which is the neurological linguistic programming, and the protocols that we use are also under that umbrella, but they were tailored and created and, you know, modified for what we need. Without telling that content, it's not the exposure piece. Yes.
In terms of telling the story of our traumatic incident over and over again, which is something that maybe happens in talk therapy, what's the difference between doing that versus the protocols that 22-0 offers, where you're not actually talking about the content of that traumatic incident?
Well, I think there's a couple of huge differences. One is anybody that's in the space of the mental health and whatever process you're running, you can get vicarious trauma. So any therapist that is out there is going, yep, I've listened to some horrific stories that I wish I hadn't heard.
you can traumatize people just from your story. So that alone, I think, keeps us safe, keeps the coaches that are running these processes for 220, keeps them safe. And again, it keeps us out of therapy, because therapy and going to therapy is a good thing, but it's even better when you can go and you're not being triggered by past traumatic events, or your emotions are not on a scale of 0 to 10, a 10, when you're just talking about something. Maybe it should be a 1 or a 2. I think the second piece of that that is was so important to Dan and I when we really started working on developing these and changing these processes, and I got to give a lot of the credit to Dan, because he was thinking outside the box. I was very much like, oh, I got to try to do things a certain way. He's like, why can't we do it this way? He wasn't afraid to kind of challenge that and go outside the box. So taking the content out, I actually seem to get better rapport with women than I do with men a lot of times, which a lot of times people go, woman work with a woman or a man work mm-hmm. with a man. But one of the things that I do love is that a woman does not have to work with me and tell me about childhood sexual trauma, nor does a man, right? Let's just mm-hmm. there's some pretty incredible statistics for people who have been incarcerated. I think it's like 80%+ of women that are incarcerated have had childhood sexual trauma, and the men number, the number for males is astronomical as well. So you can come to us and work with us, and we can go back to that deeper rooted childhood stuff, which most veterans and first responders, that's where it starts. I've yet in 5 years to work with a veteran or first responder that didn't have childhood trauma. I'm not saying it's always the case. I'm just saying it's got to be in the high 90% that it starts there, right? And then that cumulative trauma builds. So when they know, they don't have to disclose what happened to them as a kid, and they can go back to those safely, and we walk away, we don't know anything about them. They're not worried about being judged. Mm-hmm. They're more relaxed. They're more comfortable because their belief is not required in our processes, just the rapport. And I think that helps all of us get into rapport a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm. I think that unfortunately how talk therapy is set up and just how it's viewed in our culture, you know, it is re-traumatizing in some ways, or it can be viewed that way. So I think that when we get the word out about these alternative methods of therapy, there's a relief that can happen in people knowing they don't have to tell you, even with EMDR, they don't need to tell us everything. They can conjure up that image. So I think what you're saying is really important. It gives people permission to say, wait a minute, I could do something and I don't have to verbalize all of it all the time. Because that part is really challenging. And some people really enjoy it and it's cathartic and it works for them. And for some, it's really, really difficult. So I like the fact that you're making a point of that.
Absolutely. I've been in therapy. I went through a bad divorce and went to therapy by myself for 3 months. And it helped me. But if you have those rooted traumas or those rooted negative emotions, you can go to therapy for decades and not see the kind of improvement that we see with our processes, because it sets you free. And I think that's why we keyed in so important to include the spouse and the minor children. Because if you heal the family, everybody's good, you know. And a spouse, you know, it could be me, you know, coming back from combat or being a law enforcement officer, I come home and I'm abusive to my wife, not because I want to be, but I'm triggering all the time. I'm throwing stuff around the house. And now she's got her own trauma because she's scared to death that I'm going to explode and turn green and become the Incredible Hulk. Mm-hmm. When you heal the family unit, they come together, and we don't want them drifting apart. And that, mm-hmm. I think that is something we really try to get out there, is that we want to work with the family, not just the veteran. And man, anybody that's ever been married to a first responder or a military veteran, you're serving right alongside us. And I would say that you're even more important than us, because without you, boy, it's tough to make it through the day. And there's a lot of responsibility that goes into that. So it's definitely a 100% husband and wife and or family unit, and we want to heal them. I think that's the important part.
Really powerful stuff, I think, for police organizations to understand. We don't have to tear everything down. And if we focus on the most important job, the most important position is the chief of police, and we get that hire right, everything else takes care of itself. It really does. Organizational culture. I think if we change that, matter of fact, I know we change that, we're going to see cops come back. We're absolutely going to see cops come back. We're not going to have people, good people left to do this job as hard as it is when we now create cultures where we don't even value them or we don't appreciate them. hopefully a lot of leaders that read this book and say, you know what? I need to get into therapy. I need to talk to somebody. I need to get a coach. I need to freaking figure out who I am. I just hope that happens, because you'd be welcome to join the club, because we're all in this thing together.
Dr. Arnell, can you tell us a little bit about the process? Like, if somebody's considering doing it, what exactly would they be going through in order to process their trauma?
So basically what's going to happen, you know, once when you get them connected with the coach, then like Nick had mentioned, the biggest element is we're going to have that rapport. Once we've got that rapport, we're going to go as far back as we need to. We're going to find a safe place for them. There's some visualization, some disassociation, and some kinesthetic processes that we use within the two protocols. And then we get them past the trauma, and then we start working on the negative emotions, be that, you know, anger, sadness, fear, shame, terror, helplessness, whatever that negative emotion is tied around those traumas, and then other experiences. I think one of the things that we need to remember is some people may experience something when they're a child, and as an adult, they can consider that traumatic, but to that child, it was still traumatic. Mm-hmm. So we're going to make sure we're going to find this safe place before that event, because we're able to talk with them and get that information as far as going back as far back into their childhood that we can.
I want to share a couple of things that we hear common. I think it's really important what Pam just said, because I guarantee you there's a first responder or veteran watching this, and they're like, I don't remember anything from childhood. Mm-hmm. We've heard that a million times. All right. And then you're the person that says, I've got so much stuff, I don't even know where to start. Mm-hmm. I've heard that thousands and thousands of times. That is normal. You're not abnormal if that is you. Our processes and in the years of doing this with folks, we know how to navigate that. Like, your job, the way I like to frame it for people is, imagine you have an injury, right? Maybe your back hurts and you swear it's your back, right? So you go to a doctor, and the doctor's not expecting you to diagnose yourself. He's not expecting you to tell which lumbar it is, right? You're going to tell a doctor how you're feeling, and the doctor is going to guide the conversation to finally go, oh, I think it's this and this. Let's do an MRI. Here's the problem. So even though we don't use content, which is struggle, I think, for some folks to understand, how can we get rid of something that we don't talk about? It's more of the emotion you feel around it. You know where those things are. So even if you don't remember childhood, as we start peeling away that onion, right, and we start disconnecting some of that other stuff, the brain goes, thank you. Okay, can you get rid of this now? Mm-hmm. And that's why I tell everybody, look, you should plan on 2 to 4 sessions. The first one, you're going to feel much better, but we're going to start hunting and pecking and take these out one by one. And then there are also people that say, I don't do imagery real well. Well, guess what? I don't either. Some people can just, they can keep their eyes open and do visualizations. And I'm like, that is amazing how easy you can do that. Other folks, it's difficult. All I can tell you is that when we use our process, we have techniques that if you're not somebody that can visualize easily, we make that very easy. I can't tell you how many Marines I've worked with where they're like, oh, I can't turn a picture black and white. And I'm like, no kidding, because you eat crayons for a living. And then but we just have ways around that. So don't overthink it, is what I would say. Even if you're an analytical person, reach out to Pam or reach out to us. And if nothing else, we can give you a deeper level dive on what we do and explain it. And I share that if you're a spouse or a family member of somebody who has served or is serving, and you're worried about them, please, for the love of God, do not get them today and go, I saw Nick and Dr. Arnell and the team. You they can fix you. I know they can. Do not do that. Like, literally just say, hey, look, I saw an interesting podcast, or I heard one today, and I think what they were sharing might be information you'd like. Could I have one of them explain it to you? Or would you be open to them explaining what they do? Because now, if I'm the veteran, the first responder, sure, I'll listen to what you got to say. I might think you're full of crap, but I'll listen, right? There's no threat or no anxiety because I don't have to share anything. That has proved very valuable for me, because I want to heal everybody. And I used to come at it from the first approach of just sit down and I'll fix your funk. When I start explaining it and we build the rapport, all of a sudden the person's open. And then next thing you know, you're running the process and they're feeling like $1 million. And that leads to the second and third session. So just food for thought. Pam, I don't know if you want to add to that. Sorry, I hijacked it there, but I know we get those questions all the time. from folks that are like, I can't visualize. I got so much stuff and I don't remember my childhood. Right. Very common.
Right. You summed it up really well. We weren't right as a team.
In terms of the time frame to do the process, so talk therapy may be months or years for someone to get through whatever they're trying to work on. With your process, how long does it take typically for someone to process through a traumatic incident or memory?
So it varies. I'm going to give you an example of what I do. When I work with someone, I block off 2 hours, and I'm going to clear as much as I can within that 2 hour frame. Mm-hmm. But on average, it's about 2 to 3 sessions. One, that way we can get as much as, you know, of the trauma, the negative emotions on the first session. Then there are what I call weeds that pop up, because to me, trauma is like an onion. Once you open it up, there's layers. And so whatever is on the forefront that's causing them to have the triggers and having those physiological and emotional reactions, there's going to be stuff rooted down. And so that onion being unlayered, then hopefully we can get it all by the second, third, fourth session. I know within the average, it's about 1 to 6 sessions based on the averages that I keep up with the data. So anywhere between 1 to 2 to 1 to 6 sessions, but about 2 sessions, 3.
And is that done in person or virtually?
It's virtually, so they remain home. I think the big thing that is very notable is with them being home, they're going to be comfortable. They're going to be in their environment. The coach is at home, so it's a telehealth platform, and we work across the United States. And like I said earlier, you know, we're getting a lot of active duty that are actually deployed right now. So we're not going to report to the VA. We're not going to report to the department, your fire department, your law enforcement agency, EMT, EMS. They're not going to know about it unless you tell them, because it's 100% confidential.
This episode is made possible by Momentum Lifestyle Consulting, empowering first responders to achieve a balanced lifestyle by connecting the science of proper nutrition through wellness programs and supplements to improve gut health, digestion, sleep, and cellular health.
And Dr. Arnell, is there any current research being done on these processes and protocols that you're all using?
Yes. So we have 2 right now. Arizona State University is actually doing the research based on all of our law enforcement data. So we have the pre and post scores. The pre scores, there's a trauma screen, a depression screen, and an anxiety screen. And once they get through going through the process, then we're going to do the same screen. So we'll have the post scores as well. But Arizona State University is doing one. I've been working with them since last year on that. And we're in the process of the University of Pittsburgh. They've written a grant and it has been approved, and they're going to be doing a study, including using the brain mapping program that we have. It's the QEEG. So you'll be able to see the difference. So we've got 2 universities doing those studies right now.
That's great. I think what we see on our end with EMDR all the time is, that sounds great. It sounds woo-woo. Show me the data. You know, a lot of people are very skeptical about our alternative processes, if we want to call them that. So I think it's wonderful that you're looking to legitimize it on paper. And I think it'll only help you move further down the line and be able to break through in more places.
Yes. I'm very big on keeping up with the data. After I went through the training, and it's funny because I don't like numbers. I don't like data. But when I went through the training, I said it's so important to capture that. So I spent a lot of time going through and getting the pre and post scores from the beginning, because this is the 5th year that 22-0 has been in existence. And so I got as much of that data. You want to hear some numbers related to data last year?
Sure.
Okay, so let's do that. So originally we used the PSSI-5, which is a post-traumatic symptom scale interview, and we have now since changed that to the PCL5, but the PSSI. So just randomly, I'm going to pick veterans first, and then I'm going to do first responders. Mm-hmm. On the PSSI5, I just pulled 212. The pre-average was 49.91, and the post-average, meaning the post-score, was 2.81.
Wow.
On the first responders for PSSI, that was based on 125 first responders. Mm-hmm. The pre-score was 47.13, and the post-score was 2.54.
Wow.
And the average number of sessions on that one was 1.6. So then last year we changed over to the PCL5, the GAD7, which registers the, you know, the anxiety, and then the PHQ9. We just added the PHQ9 toward the end of last year. But for the veterans, looking at 118 for the pre-score, mm-hmm. for the PCL5 last year was 50.98. Their post score was 5.47 out of the 118.
Wow.
The GAD on that section of the 118 veterans. So the pre-GAD score was 14.6, and then the post was 1.92. The first responders, I pulled 102 first responders. So the pre-score was 37.54. And then their post score was 5.72.
Wow.
Their GAD pre-score was 10.94. And then their post GAD out of the 102 first responders was 2.18. And there were an average of 1.11 or 1.11 sessions just on those.
There's a part of this too that we did a podcast with Dr. David Hagedorn on the Anxiety Guys podcast. Mm-hmm. That we talked more about 22-0 and what we've been doing there. But Dr. Hagedorn did a brain scan of a first responder that was the worst he's ever seen. I mean, he's worked with special forces folks, Mars mm-hmm. Doctors, you name it. And he saw the results before and after. Dan did two sessions with this law enforcement officer. And Dr. Hagedorn, being a master EMDR practitioner, he's like, you'd be lucky to get these kind of results in 6 months with EMDR. And that's not a bash at EMDR. He was just dumbfounded at how fast it disconnected, and he could see it. He, you know, both a subjective and objective scoring matched, and here it is. So I think that, and we've had a lot of conversations. We're still in conversations with Dr. Hagedorn, but he's that part of the study that we're going to be doing in Pittsburgh and having the brain mapping cued in. I think that's going to help people because some people are visual creatures, right? We want to see it, touch it, hold it, and they're like, holy cow, there's the brain on post-traumatic stress, there's the brain off.
Right.
To include one key marker that I think is very important for law enforcement agencies. So if you're running one, they can now see without a doubt, this is per Dr. Hagedorn, the indicator that says you are suicidal with his brain map. So somebody would be like, I'm fine, nothing to see here. You hook up the brain map. No, you're not. You're full of it. Now, that's not my area of expertise. That's his. But that Dr. Hagedorn is definitely a great resource for that stuff with the brain mapping. And it ties into the data Pam was given. Sorry to jump in on you guys.
No, there's some really, really wonderful cutting edge things coming out with the brain scanning right now and the imagery. Dr. Daniel Amen does a lot as well in showing just PTSI. It's incredible. And I've been seeing more and more of these scans coming out, especially that it's National Suicide Prevention Month. There's been a lot of images and literature coming out about those scans. So I'm glad you brought it up and we appreciate it. You know, this is so exciting. So if somebody's listening and says, wow, I really want to give that a try, how would they get connected? What would be the next steps for someone?
So they can go to the 220 website. It's the number 220.org. On the top right hand side, there's a contact section on the main website, and you can actually submit a contact form. The 800 number is down at the bottom, and then you can also go to Get Healed or email us at gethealed@220.org. But it's on the website. My phone number, the 800 number, is on there. It's going to come to me. There's not a waiting list. We don't believe in waiting lists. There's been many weekends that I've worked, you know, with veterans and first responders in crisis just because I want to get them out of that crisis mode. So you're going to contact me. If you call, you're going to get me. If I'm in a meeting, I'll call you back. But go to the 220.org website. Also watch our documentary. It was released on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. So Hill and the Heroes of 9/11 was a production that Michael Geyer did for 220, working with first responders who were there on 9/11 in New York and at the Pentagon.
We didn't really touch on this yet, but I know we did offline. Nick, I wanted to ask you about how this works in terms of, does there always need to be a therapist involved, or is there more of a peer-to-peer model that you use?
That's a great question. And I'm going to give you try to make this a short-winded answer, but it might be a hair long. Yes, we do. The peer-to-peer was a model that Dan and I really dove into, because if you're somebody that's worn a uniform, a lot of us say, oh, you're a warrior. I don't think of myself as special, but I've walked in your shoes, right? No matter what that might be. So there's usually immediate rapport. You know, you go in somewhere, you don't know anybody, and the person says, I'm a firefighter. And you're like, me too. Next thing you know, you're the two chatting at the dinner table. So the fact that we don't use content made it very easy to start doing that, pairing up peer to peer. The other thing, I've gotten people that have been like, dude, you called me back almost immediately. Like, I just reached out. You just got in touch with me. Pam just got in touch with me. And I've had a couple of first responders and veterans, when we do the Zoom, they haven't met me in person. We've talked, texted, and the computer screen comes up. And I have the, you know, up here in Vermont, I have the lake at my back. So they're like, oh, hell yeah. I thought you were going to be the stuffy dude in an office with all your credentials on the wall and your PhD. And he's like, dude, that, so that it immediately builds into a conversation. It's much more personal, which I think with what we do is so important, because we're really specifically targeting trauma and negative emotions. And one of the things that Pam talked about is that first session is usually the big one. We get the big trauma and then those weeds. And the reason why it's so important to do a few sessions is that once you get some of the bigger stuff, take a week off and just see how you're different. All of a sudden you're like, man, I don't know what this is, but I'm feeling a lot of resentment. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling a lot of sadness. And then we run that through our emotions management process and disconnect those later. I was a person that had a lot of anger or rage, disconnected that. And then for like a year, I was feeling resentment. I didn't know it was resentment, because people would be like, why are you, like, you're telling this story about this person that did something wrong to you, and you're so animated, and you're, and I'd be like, I'm not angry, because I wasn't. I was not angry. And it wasn't until Dan hit me upside the head. I think you're resentful. He thought I was resentful at him in the moment. I probably was. He probably there. However, it was all related to my childhood, my earlier years. When I went and found the moment, my whole body got hot. Dan ran me through EMP and it disconnected. My wife has even noticed the difference in me. And this was just in the past couple months. So as you remove those big layers, it changes. And I think that no content piece for peer-to-peer helps. You get rapport quickly. Mm-hmm. We've walked in your shoes. We can relate to each other. And we always try to upfront let a veteran or first responder or their spouse or the kids know, if you're not comfortable with me, I'll check my ego at the door. It's not about me. This is about you. So I've worked with a few people where I'm like, I cannot get rapport with this person. Like, I want to reach mm-hmm. through the screen and yank them out of their seat for whatever reason that may be, right? Or, and I'm sure that's been vice versa, but that's very important to humble yourself and say, look, this might not be feeling good. And if at any point it doesn't feel comfortable for you, let me know. We'll get a different coach to work with you, because we don't want people to have a negative or a bad experience and disengage. And then we lose somebody else to that 22 a day or whatever number it actually is these days.
Come on. Check it.
You know, I was wondering, sitting listening to you talk, having peers deliver such a program, you're going to touch more people you know, there are only so many therapists to go around. And I think those of us who do this work see the dire need and we see the shortage and there aren't enough of us. And so I think the more hands on deck we can get, the more peer-to-peer healing that can go on, the better. It really has to be both approaches. So that's another piece of what you're describing, I think, is just so important. We know from all of our work with veterans and first responders that peer support is immeasurable. People need to be with other people who understand their situation and what it's like to walk in their shoes. And so I think tapping into that with real strategies and tools is incredible. And you'll be able to help more people.
A lot of us don't want to bring it home. I know as a man, I didn't want to bring home work and stress out my wife who's killing herself, taking care of the kids and the home and also working herself. Mm-hmm. So you bury it. So if I can be at work with one of my brothers or sisters and be like, hey, we got to run. And Pam and I have run this processes on each other. Same with Dan. So you start, you know, you heal together. And honestly, what you just said used to be one of the things that frustrated me most about the professional mental health world. Is when we first started doing these processes, we were having amazing results and we were talking to some people and we were getting shot down. And I'm like, look, I'm not trying to step on your toes here, but I've watched my friends try to get appointments with therapists. Like, well, I can't see you for 2 months. And in my head, I'm thinking, there's got to be a few clients you would like to see move on and not hear the same stuff regurgitated. So if you can start moving people through the process and then also your therapy part of your business starts having a bigger impact, right? A husband becomes a better listener. A wife becomes a better communicator. The kids are not angry. All of a sudden you see the fruits of your labor. And if those people are stuck with that trauma and those emotions, because it's all neurological, you know, those deep rooted negative emotions and trauma is neurological in nature. So if we can disconnect those, then I can go to therapy and have some profound impact on myself and my family. And I think that was our frustration, which probably caused Dan and I to get a few doors shut in our face because we were a little combative at times. We'd just be in your face. You'd be like, look, if you're not helping us, you're part of the problem. Yeah. That might have been Dan a little more than me. But the reality was, to us, it was saving lives. To Dan, this is very – it's always been like somebody could die. If we don't get to that person and we don't get more people on board, it's not about ego. And I think that as the professional mental health world shifts – and starts adopting some of this stuff, or at least being open to look at it. You know, Pam, when she says she's the unicorn, I said that to her at one point, because I'm like, I've talked to a million people. You're actually willing to go, okay, I've learned all this, but show me. I want to feel it. Now let's start talking about it. She was at least open-minded to going down the rabbit hole. And personally, I think I feel for a lot of people that are professional counselors or therapists, because they come into that world generally with a lot of their own trauma. They're trying to figure out their own funk, and they want to help others to have a funk. So now you get into a world where that's all you're hearing is everybody's funk. Mm-hmm. That makes it tough to be you, right? So if we can help you more and your world more and those people, everybody wins. And I think that's all the way to turn that around full circle to the peer support. It starts right there. If the most trauma you're experiencing is at work, at least it's not developing into this massive issue and you can catch that person before they take their life, which is what none of us want.
Right. Well, and to your point, Nick, I guess I pulled this off the website that you used the phrase, we are our brothers and sisters healers. And to date, you've trained hundreds of peer coaches that are veterans, U.S. Border Patrol agents, deputy sheriffs, police officers, firefighters, Florida National Guard, the Florida Air National Guard, and an active duty special forces chaplain. So it sounds like you are using that model, and really it's powerful.
It's way bigger than myself or Dan or Pam. 220 is 220, and we want it to become non-existent. We want to become irrelevant. I don't know if some people actually capture what that really means, but we don't want to exist. We don't want to be a nonprofit that's in existence forever. We want to cease to exist, because once enough people are trained specifically to do what we do, the disconnect of the trauma and rage and anger and sadness and depression and anxiety, it's gone within our communities. Then 220 can no longer exist, and that legacy will just carry on. That's what we want. That's our hope and our dream.
Dr. Arnell, two questions for you. One is, if somebody's kind of completed a round of processes on a trauma, Is there a follow-up available, and what does it cost to go through the process or get into 22-0's programs?
So if you are a veteran, it does not matter what branch. If you're a first responder, fire, law enforcement, EMS, paramedic, EMT, your spouse and minor children living in the home, there is no cost. We strictly rely on donations. We do not bill insurance. We don't have grants. But if that's 2 sessions, 30 sessions, we're going to pay the coach. We're not going to charge the veteran and first responders and the Gold Star families.
Wow. That's incredible.
Is there a follow-up if somebody needs a tune-up down the road or just wants to check in with the coach?
All they have to do is contact us, or a lot of the times what they do is because they've already gotten that rapport with the coach, and they're going to contact them. If I work with them, they're going to contact me and say, hey, and I've had this happen several times. I've got this that's just popped up, or, you know, we've cleared the past stuff, and especially within our first responders, you know, and those that are deployed, there's another event. So they've experienced another event, and then they're calling and saying, this is what just happened. And then we're going to do a pre-assessment on them again. Mm-hmm. We're going to go ahead and run them through the process.
Or there's could be repressed memories. You know, we all know how that works on the screen right here, that all of a sudden, wow, this trauma, I don't even remember this from when I was 4 years old, and we'll disconnect it. Our case manager, Trisha Paquette, her dad's a Vietnam vet. She has a deep love and passion for veterans. She's a really, really close friend of mine, and I've never seen somebody like their job as much as her. She pours her heart and soul into it. So all of our people that come through are directly engaged with Trisha. They're doing the pre and post assessments generally with Trisha. Pam will fill in on that when she can, but you have a network and a family, and that's what we try to set that expectation up front. If you come to us, if you're not feeling amazing after the second session, stick with us, because sometimes it's a little deeper. There's some deeper weeds that we got to get to. I've cleared traumatic events with a lot of folks where I'll go, okay, it's on a 0 to 10. It's a 10 right now. Mm-hmm. Disconnect the trauma. And you can't stop that. If you do our process and follow it correctly, the brain's going to do what the brain does. It's gone. And then I'll say, okay, let's go back. I just want you to think about that event. 0 to 10, where's it at now? And they'll go, still a 10. Back in my head, I'm going, okay, what's the new emotion? And they go, sadness, or they say anger. That's different than fear, terror, helplessness. So then we just go right into EMP on sadness or anger. And then all of a sudden they're like, wow, it's not there anymore. And some people's trauma is they think it's traumatic, but it's actually a lot of emotions like anger or sadness. That's why some of the protocols that are strictly for post-traumatic stress, I think as time goes on and our studies, you know, the data shows through, people are going to see that the peanut butter and jelly approach with the emotion side and the trauma side is so important, because we've worked with people at severe trauma and they're still jammed up because it's actually the negative emotions that are affecting them. I had one client was 40 years clinically depressed with depression on meds. And a month and a half later, she texted me. She's like, Nick, I don't know what the F you did to me. Singing and dancing and making spaghetti in my kitchen. And I am off all my meds. And I was like, she had a rooted event at about 8 years old with deep sadness. Mm-hmm. And she had some trauma too. But when we worked EMP on the sadness, she literally was like, I feel it leaving my body. Like it's going out my legs. I can feel my body shifting. And that was the biggest thing for her. So if I'd have just done the trauma work, she still would have been walking around feeling depressed. And I think that's important. And I think us collectively as members trying to heal the same folks, that those are things that we need to key in on. You know, I'm always excited to hear new stuff and what people are doing and what's working. It's been jazzed up.
Well, us too, which is the whole reason we do this podcast. Right. We have, we keep adding to our army, shall we say. We get to meet really wonderful people like both of you, and hear what people are doing all over. And it's humbling. We love it. And we're really blessed. Thank both of you very much for all of the time and thought and energy that you put into this. I know David and I really enjoyed learning about this today, and Stacy got to talk to Dr. Arnell last week, and I know she really enjoyed that as well. So thank you for the connection.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Dr. Arnell, Nick Davis, you're doing powerful work out there. Thank you so much for all you're doing and for being with us today on Respond to Resilience.
Thank you. Thanks for the podcast and healing our heroes with us. We love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Remember to like and subscribe, YouTube, Responder Resilience, Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., and Responder TV. We're on bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the podcast platforms. Also, go to our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself. Take care.